Hello, welcome to Game Slate Podcast, episode 170. I'm Proteus.
I'm Assimilator.
And I'm Zelda Queen.
And this week, we saw a movie.
Hooray!
And I watched anime.
I still feel like I'm recovering from staying up so late. I am just not...
Not built for midnight releases?
Well, if I didn't drink enough caffeine beforehand, I last through the movie, no problem. It's just coming down afterwards and then sleeping for 4 hours and you just wake up and you're like, I can't sleep anymore. My body won't let me. Then you get up and you do stuff and then you feel tired. So you take a little nap and then you still feel tired and then you can't go to sleep later. At least that was my problem. I just started thinking too much Friday night. I was like, just mind was racing. But we went and saw The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. I think I'm the only one out of the group who actually might have liked it more than the first movie and enjoyed it more than the other three. I don't know. You keep asking like it was...
I want to like it a lot. I just feel like there's not a coherent movie in there. There's a lot of action scenes all just like stymied together and...
Let's put it this way. If you thought the first movie was slow and there was a lot of talking and tedious and that sort of stuff, you'll much more enjoy the second movie, which doesn't have a lot of talking, isn't very tedious in a lot of parts, it just keeps going. And the problem is that it sometimes goes too far. You're like watching a sequence, you're like, okay, this is cool. It keeps going a little longer, you're like, okay, this is still cool. And then there's that moment.
It's like Sam Raimi over the top kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's just moments it's like, okay, we just jumped the shark. Quite literally, I will not explain what. It just involves the river and the barrels, and you will know when you go and see it.
Apparently, it involves a shark too.
Not a literal shark,
but... And then there's some stuff that you're just like, they just so crammed this in here for the sake of padding or at least, like, there are no female characters in The Hobbit.
And they invent one.
They put one in there, which I'm like, hooray, female representation in a world that apparently only dudes inhabit. At least dwarves have the excuse that they just spring up out of the rock. It's like...
No, they don't.
Well, I know they don't, but that's the legend. You know, they just pop out and fully formed and...
Middle-earth males are asexual.
They just split off. Cell splitting there. Yeah,
they reproduce through mitosis entirely.
But there was lots of pretty scenes. There was lots of pretty sets. I mean, like, the Elven Kingdom in Mirkwood. I really liked the throne room. It was awesome looking. Mm-hmm. And the guard cells were cool. Lake Town was a very interesting aesthetic. It felt very run down. I think it was a little less prosperous than what I always imagined in the book. To me, the book is like, hooray, we've rebuilt. Things aren't the greatest, but they're not that bad. Movie makes like, oh my gosh, these poor people. Smaug was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Cumberbatch, yeah, he did a really good job. He really, it's like Andy Serkis, you know, doing Gollum. These are both purely CGI critters, but they feel very real. And I felt like at least the aesthetic of the way they designed Smaug was very well done. And the Horde, it was very vast.
It was worthy of being called a horde?
Oh, yeah. I'm like, okay, the dwarves literally have no agriculture or anything else. They just buy literally all their stuff. And trust me, they can buy all their stuff with much to spare. So, yeah, it's very pretty. It was very action-paced. It kept, like, going. There's certain things, yes, I wish they had touched on more, like Bjorn.
Yeah.
He had
like 5 minutes.
Yeah, if that. Like, which made me very sad because he's, at least in the book, he was always one of my favorite characters because I always liked his house and the ponies and the animals and the way he interacted with stuff. I always thought that was very interesting.
Well, I just feel like if they have him come into the Battle of the Five Armies, it's not going to be as big of a payoff as it is in the book because he hasn't had this like screen time to establish himself at all beforehand.
Yeah, he doesn't lean himself, but he's very sympathetic as a character because they just like, okay, we're going to go keep moving on. Mirkwood was cool with these spiders. I thought they did a very good sequence there. And it was, and did a good job of making it very disorienting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I, in, enjoyed it. Is it out of the caliber that Lord of the Rings is? No. If you're wanting the epic that Lord of the Rings really brought to the table, don't look for it in The Hobbit. It's more, look how crazy we can do. I think of it as, here's the D&D adventuring party. Let's see what feats they took to do these crazy things. And you're like, What, did he really just do that? Okay, go for it. I mean, that's how I kind of enjoyed it a little bit more. Just think of it, because it's so over the top.
You kind of detached your mind. You detached your suspension of did a suspension of disbelief. It's like, okay, I'll just go with it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of parts you're just like, how did? If you start thinking about it, really, like you start critically analyzing things, it's like, really? This doesn't make any sense in context. What's going... Okay, I'm just going to go with it.
Such as the eternal question, where is the town watch?
Yes! That is the eternal question in this movie. Where is the town watch? And why is it that Bard can be watched at all times, but we can't watch for the enemy?
Because everything happens at a tavern.
No, it doesn't.
Hey, that's what Adventuring 101 taught me, is everything starts at a tavern.
Well, yeah, but not here. And
it started at the Prancing Pony.
Yeah, and Peter Jackson's obvious cameo.
It was the same cameo as is in Fellowship of the Ring and Bree with the rain and the carrot. It's kind of hilarious, actually.
So,
mostly just because I'm going there, I'm like, ah.
Sad news is we've learned that, okay, originally when they were releasing the movies and they announced they were going to do the third, it was supposed to come out in July of 2014. It has been pushed now to December of 2014.
Bastages.
Yes, and it cuts off in the appropriate place it should, but it's a cliffhanger. I guess I'm not spoiling it. It cuts off with Smaug going to Lake Town. If you haven't read the book, you
or watched the cartoons from when we were kids.
I mean, most every...
Or one of the other ways you could have probably find out how this book goes.
Let's see. Audiobooks, BBC radio drama.
There's probably a comic form we just don't know about.
Yes, there is.
So yeah, if you don't know how this goes, I'm sorry. I just had to, you know, say that. And so it's like, oh, darn it. So we gotta wait another year. I really wish they only did two movies, because then we would have, less padding and silliness and more focused, I think. I think the focus would have helped a lot. So that's my opinion. I mean, if you want just a fun movie to enjoy this Christmas and nothing else looks very good to you because you're just like, eh, go and see it.
Well, basically, so far the choices for movies this Christmas season are
Catching
The Hobbit,
Fire.
Catching Fire,
Frozen. I gotta go see Frozen with my mom. She's like,
a lot of people are wanting to see Anchorman 2.
Nope,
I'm
not one of those people. But my sister-in-law really wants to see that movie. Apparently, Anchorman was one of her favorite movies ever, and I don't get it.
I'm not big on Will Ferrell. I do not enjoy his style of comedy very well, so I don't enjoy it. I know there's some people who think they're hilarious. I think one of my pastors really wants to go see it that I work with. He's like, but the things I did find entertaining is Will Ferrell is acting like his character from Anchorman in various TV commercials advertising for stuff now.
Well, I've heard he's actually been on
news
stations, actually running the news as Ron Burgundy.
See, to me, those little parody things like that seem much more entertaining than a full movie. But I don't usually go to the theater for comedies either. It's one of those weird things.
Well, for how much movies cost anymore, and this is my opinion, it's like, I would rather go to the movie theater for something that's, epic in scale and watch the comedies on my TV in the comfort of my own home. I mean, like, The Hobbit. It is epic in scale, and then you could actually pay off from having the visual and audio effects that come with a movie theater. Anchorman 2... You'll get the laugh track of everybody sitting in the theater is the bonus of going to.
Yeah, I've heard that's the bonus of seeing comedies in the theater, even if it's something you're like, how is this going to work? When you get a group of a few hundred people together, and if one person kind of starts laughing, it's very contagious. Everybody else is like, oh yeah, that is entertaining. And I mean, I had never seen the first American Pie, but I went and saw American Pie 2 with some of my friends in high school. And we all busted a gut at it, but it was just because the theater was packed. And it was just, you know, contagious with all the other people there. Yeah.
I was working at a theater when American Pie, the original one, came out.
I had to rent it later, so. And I was like, oh, that's an uncomfortable movie to watch with your parents.
I could see that.
It was an uncomfortable to watch. There's something about Mary with your parents and your grandparents.
I could also see that.
Well, the other thing that's coming out is 47 Ronin. I don't know if you've...
I've seen some trailers on it, but I haven't looked too deeply into it.
I just like Keanu Reeves, and I think I'm going to have to go with Crack's After Hours thing, crack.com's After Hours. They were discussing... How they are talking about like Keanu Reeves and some other people.
Oh, yeah. It's because it's like a blank face that you can project yourself onto.
And so I was like, okay, I can see why they maybe got him because he's in all these action movies that actually do decent. And I don't know if it's more because of him or because of us being able to do self-insertion or it just everything else was so good that you're like, eh. I can overlook this. I just don't know. All I can say is I had to read up on the 47 Ronin because I knew of it and kind of what it was involved, but not in detail. It is an actual historical event. There might have been a little bit of embellishing over the years on certain facts, but there is still the 47 Ronin's grave. You can actually go and visit it in Japan. But basically, yeah, it's basically 47 samurai who their lord is basically... caused to do ritual suicide and they decide to avenge him because he was supposed to help a court official help get their area ready for when the emperor came through to visit. Well, there was some sort of slight. He got angry, drew his sword or dagger in a place he wasn't supposed to and basically sliced the face of this, you know, court official that was supposed to help him. And because of that, he broke all these laws. They didn't really show him a lot of mercy, you know. You know, ritual suicide. They confiscate all his lands and everything, so all his samurai are left, you know, masterless, and they take 2 years to plot how to get, you know, back at this guy because they know that the second they kill him, they're all going to have to die by killing themselves as well.
So it's like, if we're going to do this, let's make sure we at least do it right because we don't get a second chance.
Yeah. Which, you know, some scholars say that it was actually, they weren't following the code of Bushido as closely because they should have done it right then and there. They should have just went and got their revenge. But the guy knew that they were going to do that, so he, like, super fortified himself. And they basically made themselves look like drunks and vagrants and, you know, went to other lines of work. So when he finally dropped his guard, they went and, you know, attacked him. But they said, what if he died of natural causes before they got a chance to attack? They would have, you know, totally ruined all of, you know, their standing of honor and such. And there would have been no way recourse of getting anything back. So it would have been very problematic had he died of some other way means before they, you know, killed him in their revenge.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the movie seems to be filled with all sorts of supernatural things.
Fantasy visuals and dragons
and
guys, paint, you know, all tattooed, look like skull skeletons and all. Yeah, it's just like, okay, we just basically took it and did high Eastern fantasy instead of like The Hobbit, which is high Western fantasy. I don't know. I'm like, it might be worth a watch once it gets released on video, but I'm not going to go see it in the theater. The only one that looked kind of interesting was the Ben Stiller movie. I can't remember what it's called.
The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Yeah, just because it was so surreal and the way that he just zones out and then thinks about how he really wishes his life could be. And I'm like, I can sort of sympathize with that just thinking, because sometimes I do daydream, not quite as
wildly
or severely as, you know, he's just totally, you know, gone. So I think that one just looked interesting. And then there was another young adult Divergent.
Mm.
I had to go look it up. The series hasn't even been out for like 3 years yet. It's a trilogy, and it's, you know, in a similar string of the Hunger Games, or like this weird future where people, you know, are assigned particular jobs, and if you can't fit into particular ones, they will kill you.
Well, it's like Brave New World, except made for tweens.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. I had to read the plot summary, and I was just like...
Did Huxley do it better?
Yeah. Because there's just so much dystopian right now. So many people are doing dystopian futures.
That's what happens when people are worried.
Yeah, it is.
The other things that Zelda Queen and I did this week is played more Zelda.
No, you're way farther ahead than me.
Yeah, I am mostly...
What am I looking at? The Book Thief?
Is that it?
No, that one's a different movie. The Book Thief. No, it is called Divergent.
Oh, okay. Not in our neck of the woods, then.
It's not out.
It's not out yet. Oh. It was one of the previews that we saw. It's coming out soon-ish.
Never mind then. Yeah, sorry. Continue on.
No, I like the Book Thief's about kid who smuggles books away from book burnings, and his dad starts helping him in Nazi Germany.
At least that sounds honorable.
But yeah, more Wind Waker.
Start doing the Earth Temple is what I did. Because I've basically, at this point, explored every square to the extent I can so far. Now, getting to one, I'm like, oh, I need the thing. I need the iron boots. Okay, I'll come back to this one later.
Or I need the hook shot. Or I need the mirror shield. Finally got the power gauntlet, you know, power gloves. Or power bracelets, I guess, in this one. It's power bracelets.
Yep. So I got off those big stone faces.
Does anybody else ever go into a game thinking, okay, I'm not going to do the side quest for a little bit. I want to do these parts of the story. And then you find yourself going to the side quest earlier than you ever thought you were going to.
Now, I purposely did that. I was like, okay, I got the Master Sword. I'm going to go explore everything that I can now. I really purposely did. Actually, I want as many heart containers as I can get. I want as many bombs and arrows as I can get.
Yeah, because that just makes, you know, life a lot easier. And the sooner you do
all the rupees.
Yeah. I like doing side quests. I like sometimes because I just like to go explore. That's, you know, my gripe about most more modern Final Fantasies is they're very railroad, you know, track driven. It's like, okay, here's the plot. Stay with the plot. And you're like, well, I'm sticking with the plot, but I want to go see what's over here. Oh, no, you can't go that way. You can't go anywhere. I'm like, but I want to. Nope, you can't. And I'm like, and that's why 6 is my favorite, because there's a lot of hidden things everywhere in that game and finding things and, you know, which turn out to your benefit a lot of times later on when you're, you know, progressing. But the other thing we've been trying to finish is Attack on Titan. We're on, what, episode 22 or 23 now?
Yeah, I think 22.
We're slowly, but I've already watched it once. We're slowly but surely getting through. The thing that's different is I originally watched it on Crunchyroll. Their translation is slightly different than the one on Hulu, because the Hulu one is from Funimation. They call things slightly different in terms of the gear and some of the groups and some of the plot contexts. And so it's been interesting just seeing how they, you know, settle differences in translation.
Does it actually make a difference in stuff?
Yes. In a couple of sequences, it was funny. In one translation on Crunchyroll, there's a particular scene that made a lot more sense plot-wise. It's sort of an aha, think about it moment. Then in the Funimation one, it was kind of confusing. The initial episode, but when it gets revisited again in some of the later episodes, the translation's more closely to what the Crunchyroll one had, which makes more sense. But I don't know. What are your thoughts? Because I've already talked about it a lot. Because this is my second time through.
Yeah, I am still. I don't know what I'm like. What is, you know, what is actually going on here? Why? Like what is the thing behind the thing? I mean, I know it's like there's people that can be Titans and whatnot, and you know that. It's just like, who made that? Why?
Yeah, let's put it this way. There's a lot of questions. The first season here does not address any questions of the bigger. You know there's a bigger plot going on by the end, but you don't know who's behind it, why they're behind it, why are things this way, why is humanity in this tiny spot, why do the Titans act the way they do, and what is their purpose? why don't they want, you know, why are, is humanity kept to this one tight little corner? So hopefully the second season explains it. Maybe the manga explains it more. I have no desire really right now to read the manga. I've told it's, the art is a little shaky in the beginning, but it improves quite quickly. Probably just because constantly drawing as fast as possible probably helps with that. And also I've been told it's much more graphic than the anime. And the anime is pretty graphic. To the point that we don't eat when we're watching it. And I also tell everybody, don't get attached to, like, anybody.
And so, while I haven't watched any of it, would you say it would have the same stereotype Game of Thrones does?
Don't get attached to anybody because they're going to die?
Yes.
Yes. And if things can go bad, things can go bad really quickly. But I think it's...
It is really... If anything can go wrong, it will go wrong.
Yeah. Once in a while, there is something that you're like, oh, heck yeah, we did something. And it actually turned out good. Hooray.
For like 5 minutes.
And it's followed by a whole bunch of, you know, bad stuff. But I think it's more... It feels... It makes when the good stuff happen feel like it has a bigger payoff than if the good guys always, you know, progress and there is no sacrifice to get what they really want. I recommend watching it. There's a variety of things to watch it on. Crunchyroll, like I said, Funimation, which actually has it on Hulu Plus, which is beneficial for us because we can watch it on our television. Hooray! No sitting at my computer screen. So that's what we've done.
Okay. Myself, I'm about 3 episodes into a new series called Kill la Kill. Basically, the plot of this one is this one girl is trying to find out who killed her father. And the only clue that she had was the killer left half of a giant pair of scissors at this, after they killed her father.
How giant are we talking about? Like,
it's as tall as she is.
Okay. Ridiculously gigantic.
Ridiculously gigantic. So she goes to this school where the students are ranked between 0 and 3 stars, and then there's the student president, that the council president that actually runs the entire thing. And depending on what kind of stars uniform you have, it will actually give you powers. Like, 1 star increases speed and strength. 2 stars is usually specially designed to help you in some other way. The ones I've seen so far is 1 turned this guy's boxing gloves into steel, basically. And another one made this girl a super evil tennis player. And, I mean, they use their stuff to attack people that, you know, don't quite follow the rules. So she comes into this place, and she goes to attack one of the people to try and find information after she enrolls. Yeah, she's enrolled in the school where she needs to attack everybody. I don't understand that concept real well, but hey, it's anime. So after she fails to attack them, she goes back to where her house was, and then this mysterious figure, which I don't think I'm spoiling anything because I'm talking about stuff 3 episodes in, ends up being one of her teachers that is undercover trying to find out what's going on at the school. So he drops her into this hole where she starts bleeding because this wound got reopened from the earlier battle, falls into this uniform, which then comes alive and forces her to wear it.
Can I just say, just what you've explained right now, this thing is like a scale out there.
Well, after watching the first episode, my first thought was, this reminds me a lot of Gurren Lagann. So, I mean, the over-the-topness, but the characters just running with it and making things work is almost exactly like Kamina was.
Did I ever tell you about the Gurren Lagann review I found from a girl named... Her handle's Jesu Otaku on thatguywithglasses.com. Basically, she's like, Gurren Lagann is a show that should never have worked. There is nothing about it that makes any sense. You know, nothing really ties together plot-wise. Everything is ridiculously over the top. But she goes, but you can feel the passion behind everybody who's involved in it. And their passion is so great that you can't help but love the chaoticness that it is and root for the characters, because it's just like, look at them go, because they had so much fun with it, even if it was, you know, kind of, if you really critically look at it, a big hot mess. Yes.
And so far, that's what this show seems like. In the first three episodes, the girl doesn't care much for this uniform when it's in an active state where it can empower her, because it is very embarrassing to wear. But eventually she comes to her arch nemesis ends up we find out she has the same type of uniform. It's basically a living cloth that empowers the wearer and makes them stronger. And the like 1-star uniforms have 10% are made of 10% of that cloth. 2 stars, 20%. I'm going to assume 3 stars are 30%. But her uniform is made entirely of this cloth.
And so we were just experimenting, and it just happened to get laying somewhere.
Well, her...
Sorry, Professor. My suitcase opened up, and I lost 100% living cloth, you know, prototype. I don't know where it went. The priest carried it away.
Dad was trying to make it in order to combat the people that are holding the secret of this living cloth. And the school is actually run by the people that he was trying to stop. So it was hidden away from them.
Okay.
And the professor knew where it was because he was working with her dad.
Okay, so he's an ally.
He's an ally. So it's not, you know, it was... He purposely dropped her down there to find it.
Okay.
But of course, they can't let anybody at the school know that they're allies. And he goes over the top when he, you know, talks to her... in a safe place, because when he's typically when he's talking, so this is what happened here, and he's like wearing glasses and kind of hunched down. He looks very unassuming, and then when he starts talking to her, it's like does the thing with the one finger of the glasses and completely lifts them up and off. It's like his shirt comes open and he's all muscular. It's like, whatever, I'm just gonna roll with this. They have equal opportunity fan service in this show so far. And it is, I will say, it is, that is probably its, could be considered its biggest caveat, is it's extremely fan servicey. But it's entertaining enough that I want to keep watching it to see where they go. Where it left off at the end of episode 3 was she had accepted her uniform, because they made the thing about, like, she's wearing the uniform, but she's not really wearing it because she has it on, but she's not accepting it because of how embarrassing it makes her. So he has to drink a lot of blood in order to stay powered up. Yes, she has to actually physically be bleeding at first for this thing. She has to actually physically be bleeding for the uniform to work.
Hooray!
So when she's not accepting it, it has to drink a lot of blood to power her. So he keeps, you know, during the battle, he'll warn her. It's like, you got like 5 minutes or you're going to pass out from blood loss, just so you know that. And there was this one part where actually it's like she's talking and complaining to him about it, and he's like, you're the one not wearing me, and you just wasted 45 seconds. So then she finally accepts it.
And so it'll make things better.
Well, then she only needs this little pinprick in order to power it, instead of actually, you know, her wrist slit.
Like, here, empty my body of blood so I just pass out and die.
Basically what was happening before, she has this wrist thing and she was pulling it. And so basically she was slitting her wrist in order to bleed enough to power it.
We can stop talking about this show now.
At the end of episode 3, it was just a little pinprick in her skin that gave it enough power in order to make her strong enough to fight the student council president, who then ran off and said, if you can beat the entire student body, then we'll fight. So at the end of episode 3, beginning of episode 4, she has to basically start, the entire student body is out to kill her. But I mean, it looks entertaining, and they don't show her actually bleeding. It's just, you know, it goes into monochromatic thing where she's black and it'll just show red going into the uniform. So it's not gory bleeding.
But I'm thinking about it right now and it's making me feel bad.
But I mean, and basically what I've read about it is, if you liked Gurren Lagann or Panting Stocking with Garter Belt, you'll enjoy this show. And while I haven't watched Panting and Stocking with Garter Belt, I have watched and enjoyed Gurren Lagann. And I will have to agree with the nothing in that show makes sense, nothing should have worked, but it does.
Okay, let's call it there.
All right. Y'all can find us at thegameslave.com. I'm not going to go over every single social media site that we're on, because you should all either know it or you can listen to last week's podcast.
Well, if nothing else, we're on all of them. Look for The Game Slave.
Yeah, that's pretty much correct. In the meantime, if we don't see you next week, Merry Christmas. And whatever holiday it is that you may celebrate at this time of year. And game on.
Game on.
Game on.